For Emily. Prologue. Even with the miracle of modern travel, it takes days for me to reach the edge of the Nullarbor plain. 3 or 4 flights, a quick shower in Perth, then a night or two backtracking east in a rented truck. The two-lane carriageway stretches endlessly through the ghost towns of Australia's old goldfields. Eventually, I turn onto dirt roads, onto red rock. When I stop the truck and climb down from the cab, everything is still. Finally, I've arrived at the place where the desert cracks open. I come here every couple of years to the ancient terrain of the Yilgarn Craton, some of our world's oldest rocks. Dotted throughout the dark ochre expanse are oval ponds that are as corrosive as battery acid. Yet in these sulfuric waters, against all odds, is the most astonishing array of life. I come to investigate how primitive microbes survive the harsh conditions, how they harvest energy, and what traces they leave behind in the minerals. I come because I'm a planetary scientist, and because this is one of the most similar places on Earth to the ancient surface of Mars. I come to the Yilgarn and other wild wastelands, like the McMurdo Dry Valleys in Antarctica, like the Atacama in Chile, to hone my skills at finding life. Out in the desert, I rise with the dawn. I pull on my tattered field clothes and slather sunscreen across my face. My boots crack with salt as I slip my feet into them. I throw on my hat with wine corks hung from string around its brim, ready to drive away the flies. I weigh my pack down with equipment and water and head straight onto the flats. I spend my days wading into the sucking mud. In some places, the ground parts easily. In others, the enveloping salts are as hard as ice. I note the GPS coordinates, map the terrain, measure the water chemistry, and assess the minerals. Later, back in my laboratory, I will examine each tiny piece of the acid-encrusted world I place into a vial. The sun beats down. The wind whips around me. But I rarely notice. I'm focused, consumed. At the end of my work days, after I load up my instruments, I climb up on top of the dusty cab, exhausted. As the sun begins to set and the sky turns salmon pink and red dust hangs in the air, it's not hard to imagine that I'm on another planet altogether. Staring off into the silence, I think of all my predecessors, some sitting in deserts just like this, some hoping to signal Mars with giant trenches of fire, others building enormous telescopes in the stock-still air. A boy curled up in the shadow of a Benedictine abbey, longing for his own corner of the unknown to map. A shutterbug from Indiana who developed tens of thousands of blurry images of Mars, hoping one might show something. A French aeronaut who piloted a helium balloon high into the stratosphere, so high that he might asphyxiate just to get his measurements. It's a peculiar band I've joined, this pack of Mars scientists, fiercely bound across the generations by the enigma of a neighboring world. One might fairly wonder why we have pinned our hopes for finding life to this red planet. For the last couple of billion years, there has been no rain there. There are no rivers, no lakes, no oceans. Without the driving force of fluid erosion, scars left over millions of years by meteorites are strewn across the surface. Mars has no plate tectonics, no magnetic field, and little protective atmosphere. The terrain is quiet, exposed, and bewilderingly empty. Yet long ago, before it rusted over, Mars was much more like Earth. Smaller, but similar in size and elemental composition. In its early days, Mars was black with igneous rock. Untold piles of lava built the planet's massive volcanic provinces, which bulged with enough basalt to flex the crust.